Good morning, everyone. Today is August the 31st, 2013. And we are working now in the Angel of the Presence commentaries. This is going to be commentary number 8, and it may be the last one in this series. Really, we've only had, if you think about it, there's only a few pages of this material. Maybe from 44 to perhaps 48 or 49. And yet it runs very deep, dealing with the merging of the Angel of the Presence with the disciple in the personality, which is occurring at the time of the third initiation. There have been two previous mergings to this, one in which the angel is recognized as active intelligence, and the next in which the quality of love is added to the recognition at the second initiation. And then we have a recognition of loving intelligence. Finally, the will is added to the process at the third degree. So all that remains in this series of discussions, wishing they could always be deeper than they are, but having to go with what one knows at the present time, we have the seventh ray. And I'm going to read that section. Here we are. The Angel of the Presence lifts one hand into the blue of heaven. He plunges deep the other into the sea of forms. Thus he connects the world of form and formless life. Heaven to earth he brings and earth to heaven. This the man who stands before the angel knows. He grasps the meaning of the painted sign which the angel holds aloft. And then I think it must be DK who is writing here. Then follows a phrase which is incapable of translation into modern language. It signifies that complete merging, which the mystic endeavors to express in terms of the marriage in the heavens, and which has been wrongly twisted into the false teaching anent sex magic. This phrase, expressed by a painted symbol, symbolizes complete unity between the outer and the inner, the objective and the subjective, between spirit and matter, between physical and the essential. Then follows, the two are one, naught more remains to grasp, the word is manifest, the work is seen complete, the whole is visioned, the magic work is wrought. Again the two are one. The plan is served. No word need then be said. And we will have some further discussion of three paragraphs before the new section about the cycles of egoic appropriation. Well, okay, let's take a look at this. We've all seen the tarot card of the magician. It's a Mercurian card. It's one of the first cards, isn't it? The one that follows the fool. And I suppose the right hand of will is lifted into the blue of heaven. The blue is important because it suggests the love wisdom ray and the general that general second aspect of divinity, which seems to be so characteristic of our local cosmos. Certainly it is characteristic of our system, the system of the blue logos. Okay, I think I... So we have the magician showing his particular stance, one hand above. And from there, from the heavens, the inspiration can come, and the contact with the higher energies, which must be united with the lower. Okay. Now, deep, he is working, the angel is working as usual on the higher mental plane. In these stanzas, on the higher mental plane. He plunges deep, the other, into the sea of forms. Now, the sea suggests matter, right? This word, sea, suggests matter. Water and matter are the same. And in this sea, on three lower planes, there are many forms, some of which may have been created in response to a higher impulse, but many of which are created simply in response to desire. So here we have, he is connecting, I mean, this is quite obvious, that not too many words maybe are needed to describe what is going on here. He has connected heaven with earth. He is capable of working in the lower worlds. I'm just going to take a look here at the tarot card of the magician. Let's see here. Maybe this will do it. And we'll tarot card magician. Okay, well, there it is. This is the way to deck, and it is certainly the right hand which is elevated with the wand, which is receiving the energy. And the left hand here is pointed, and so the energy can be directed down into the world of forms. We have different representations here, indeed. But this one, I think, is the classic one, and dating from the ancient times. Okay. So, thus he connects the world of form, which is, in this case, the 18 lower subplanes, and formless life. And here we imagine this means the cosmic ethers, the realm of true livingness, the realm of true spiritual inspiration as far as a man is concerned. There are many heavens, you know. Every one of the higher planes can be considered a heaven. Let's say that the plane on which the egoic lotus is found is the third heaven. The Buddhic plane, the fourth, the Atmic plane, the fifth, Monadic plane, the sixth heaven, and finally we get to the Logoic plane, seventh heaven. DK talked about St. Paul's comment regarding the third heaven as it veileth the seventh, which he says was completely misunderstood by everybody. Well, we have the height of happiness in the fulfillment of desire, represented by the phrase being in seventh heaven, but it's not at all what it finally means. So thus he connects the world of form and formless life, although anything on the cosmic physical plane, anything that occurs, is still cosmically in the world of form. From our perspective, systemically, and in the lower three worlds, the higher ethers are formless, and so that upraised hand of the magician, the right hand of will, is being upheld by a left hand above him. It's the occult chain in the occult catechism. And there is an impartation of higher energy to him. So he's definitely making contact. He is a bridge here, and in a way he's putting his finger in the socket, you know. He's lifting that hand so high that the cosmic electricity will be coming through him and can be, he then becomes the transformer, and it is then transmitted to the lower worlds in service. Thus he connects the world of form and formless life. And this is a nicely balanced phrase, heaven to earth he brings and earth to heaven. And by earth, we have to mean the dense physical body of the planetary logos in this case, because he is positioned on the higher mental plane, which is part of the dense physical body of the solar logos, but not of the planetary logos. At least that is my present working hypothesis. Heaven to earth he brings, earth to heaven. This the man who stands before the angel knows. And, you know, he's the man now is very close to the higher mental plane or within it. Very close to the higher mental plane or has been taken within it. Because we have to deal with the merging of the angel of the presence with the candidate, the returning monad, all these names, the blessed one, the blessed one not yet fully self-realized. And we can call it as well, you know, the soul in incarnation, or the monad in extension. These are the kinds of phrases I have been using to describe the pilgrim in the lower worlds, who is an extension of the monad in attenuation. That's the man. That's who the man is, and he has climbed to the middle point, which is the egoic lotus, which is considered a kind of heart center of the monad. He is entering this realm of love and light, having trodden the lighted path thereto. So, the man knows the operations of the angel. He knows what the angel is doing. We remember in the first ray, it focuses in the head of him who stands before the angel. That was the first ray pilgrim. Now we have here the seventh ray pilgrim, who is going to stand face to face, or is standing face to face with the angel, preparatory to the merging. Okay, all of these stanzas are about merging, and I suppose every one of us wants to experience the full soul infusion so that this energy from the hearts of fiery love, this bridging energy, can suffuse our consciousness and characterize our relationship to all things in the lower three worlds. And we are getting a lot of assistance in this. We're getting a lot of help, a great deity, or let's say a very, very advanced human being who has become more than man, he's become a member of the fifth creative hierarchy, is assisting the human beings in this solar system to achieve a status similar to his own. So we're not doing this entirely by ourselves. As we call, as we summon, as we invoke, there will be a response from those higher monads than our own monad. Of course, in a way, all monads are one, and all are at exactly the same state of being, though not the same state of expression in objectivity or in matter form. So he's calling the Great One to assist him invoking the Great One, the first master whom we encounter, the angel of the presence, the solar angel via the angel of the presence is the first master, and we are attempting a merging with this being. The angel of the presence has fused itself with our own egoic nature. The two, in a way, are one, and we are merging into our higher self, which has received an endowment, so to speak, of the presence and consciousness of the solar angel in the form of the angel of the presence. And so as we merge with our own egoic nature, we're merging with a structure which has been built and sustained, well, built largely because of the solar angel, and sustained through its efforts via the angel of the presence, and sustained also via the monad. We're entering a higher aspect of our own energy system, but in a way that angel of the presence has become merged with and one with this higher aspect of our energy system. So in a way, it's not different from what we are. It has its own origin, of course, its own monad, but it has become a kind of energy which has fused and blended with what we are on the higher mental plane. And in a sense, it is what we are on the higher mental plane. It won't always be. We may later retain what it has given and the vibrational level which it that it has with which it has supported us, but it will go its own way, and we will be left with the result. But for the moment, on the higher mental plane, we are at least partially what it is. Now here is the man at work again. It's the man, the candidate, the pilgrim. He, and I'll just say here, the pilgrim grasps the meaning of the painted sign which the angel holds aloft. Now, you know, in other words, a whole process is indicated in symbolism. And, you know, when you look at the fourth-ray types and the seventh-ray types, they speak often through symbols, through forms which tell of a much higher state of reality. Certain forms or pictures which are presented to us in terms which we recognize and shapes which we recognize, but which point entirely to something higher and which embody something higher. So there is color here, there is form, and the angel is holding this high so that the man can be instructed. Okay, so the angel is instructing the pilgrim and is letting him know what process has been occurring. And then there is a phrase, and we're not going to know this phrase. DK is describing it for us. We cannot translate it, he says, into modern language, but it signifies, you know, the complete merging of heaven to earth, earth to heaven, heaven and earth become one. And this is the great fusion we have been looking for. The fusion first of soul and personality, but probably implying the fusion of all that spirit gives and all that is within the realm of matter. Because not only are soul and personality as two intermediate points indicated as in the process of fusion, but there is a greater process of fusion which really involves the extremes which still are in a way each other, i.e. spirit and matter. So this sign is held aloft, the symbolism of it, I'm sure he's somehow translating from symbolism. the complete merging which the mystic endeavors to express in terms of the marriage in the heavens. Now, the two partners, the Christ consciousness and the consciousness of the pilgrim, the soul and personality, and which has been wrongly twisted into the false teaching and that sex magic, which is, I suppose, really a gross materialization of the higher union. Of course, Libra is involved in both. We know that for the man early in his career in Libra, we get the phrase unbalanced fiery passion. Later, we do have the real marriage in the heavens, or the soul infusion, the fusion of the ego on the higher mental plane, substanded by the angel of the presence, with the with its personal expression in the lower three worlds. So man has had a very materialistic type of consciousness and has tended to interpret high things with which he has somewhat lost contact or completely lost contact in terms of a much lower expression that is immediately present to him and which he can understand. We have to certainly refine the consciousness so we do not become so preoccupied with the material level left over from the previous solar system. All of that has to be redeemed. So this phrase tells of the merging. This phrase expressed by a painted symbol. Yes, it is a symbol. So there will be color involved in it. And, whoop. Okay, looks like I did something here. Suddenly lost my, all right. Expressed by a painted symbol. And it symbolizes complete unity between the outer and the inner, the objective and the subjective, and yes, in fact, extending all the way to the uppermost parts of the cosmic ethers, the spirit and matter, that of which form is consisting in the lower worlds. If you think about it, matter is built into form. Form relates to the second aspect of divinity and to the geometrizing, structuring of the material element, which is built, which comes into relationship, the constituents of which come into relationship with each other according to this sustained, subtle form related to the second aspect. And if it's of God, it will be geometrized. Okay, so this phrase expressed by a painted symbol symbolizes the complete unity of the outer and the inner. And when we think about this, you know, we may wonder, well, what really does that mean? But it's the two really have become one. And it's as if the customarily perceived duality no longer exists, as if personality really is soul, and soul is really the transpersonality. So one field emerges from the two. And, of course, in a way they do, I suppose, maintain their own integrity, but in such a harmonious and cooperative way with each other that they might as well be completely one. We don't have complete homogeneity. Complete homogeneity is of the spirit alone when we deal with the one substance, the one substance. But at least we have such a harmonious relationship that there is a harmonious interplay in all matters and no resistance of the lower to the higher. The lower becomes the complete expression of the higher. Well, at least the complete, all that is possible as an expression. Because to a certain extent, I suppose, all lower prakritic dimensions, dimensions of matter force, must somehow place a constraint upon the full expression of a higher dimension of matter force. Nevertheless, the usual obstacles and resistances and deflections and barriers are gone. So complete, in other words, whatever I am as a soul in the causal body, I can pretty much and almost completely show right here and now in this vehicle. This phrase, expressed by a painted symbol, symbolizes the complete unity between the outer and the inner, the objective and the subjective. The soul is always subjective. The higher mental plane is considered subjective. And let's see what else. Between spirit and matter, between the physical and the essential. Sometimes the soul is called the quint essence. The quint essence, the fifth essence. It's the fifth in a series beginning from physical, etheric, astral, lower mental, and finally we reach the fifth, which is the place whereon the soul is expressing itself. So physicality is not of the essence, and the strictly physical is not principle, but we are dealing here with the merging of the causal nature, egoic lotus, angel of the presence nature, which sometimes is called a principle, with the lower principles, which involve lower mind, sometimes kama manas, kama, prana, and sometimes the etheric vehicle is considered a principle. And then we have a series, is it nine short phrases? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yes, the nine of completion. Nine completes this phase of development because it leads to the third initiation. All nine petals of the egoic lotus are unfolded at the third initiation. So I suppose it is not a coincidence here that nine phrases describe what has happened. And the question is, who is observing, who is speaking? It seems like maybe both. Maybe from the higher perspective, these words are issuing. But also we can see that the self-realized man, or at least at a certain stage of self-realization, the pilgrim who is realizing himself to be the soul, and who realizes himself at one with the angel of the presence, could say some of these phrases. Well, the two are one. Obviously, the soul and personality have merged, the angel of the presence and the pilgrim have merged. And in all that the pilgrim does, he feels the supportive presence of the angel of the presence. Naught more remains to grasp at this phase of development. Now, obviously, the pilgrim is going to move on once the angel of the presence has returned to the heart of the sun, or maybe to the central spiritual sun. It's really the return of the solar angel, who in a sense, how can we put it, the solar angel withdraws that aspect of itself which it has invested in the matter of the higher mental plane to create and substand substand the egoic lotus. So at this phase, naught more remains to grasp. Well, I would say until the fourth initiation, there is still something to grasp. But we can say that in some ways this stanza could apply even to the period leading up to the fourth degree, when we would have the dissipation of the causal body. The two are increasingly one from the third degree to the fourth, and we have more the contrast between the 75% and the 100% of fusion. I'm assuming that if 75% of the matter of the vehicles is atomic matter at the time of the third degree and 100% at the time of the fourth degree, that there is still some ways to go here before the fusion is utterly complete. But, you know, perhaps these stanzas can also be used leading up to the period just before the fourth initiation. The word is manifest, so, well, you know, we understand that. The word is the soul. And if this soul is, well, completely merged, or let's just say merged, with the personality, and the personality lives in the world of manifestation, then the word has become manifest through the personality. The word is manifest through the personality, and that's what we are, each of us, in our own way, seeking to be the word in manifestation. Our inner nature is the word. Maybe the word for each human being is different. There's a name, there's a sound, there's a combination of energies which sounds and resounds as a certain word. And each one of us has to carry that word into manifestation. We have to be that word in manifestation. This is when we begin to undergo monadic retraction and identify ourselves more with what is found on the higher mental plane than what is found in our customary vehicle. This is a necessary re-identification. The work is seen complete, and what is this work? This is the work of fusion. So the fusion formulas have been expressed, or have been used to bring about the desirable result. There is now fusion, real fusion, of all three aspects of the soul with the three aspects of the personality. We can say, you know, that at the second degree, we do not yet really have the completely illumined mind that would come at the third degree. And at the first degree, we do not yet have the astral body, which has been touched by the great love energy and de-glamorized. We don't have that yet. But now at the third degree, we have all three aspects uniting, and each raising an aspect of the personality into a transfigured state. We do have Uranus affecting the mind, bringing occult mind and realization. We do have Neptune, the home of the solar flames, affecting with heart of the sun energy, the astral body. And we do have the luminosity of Vulcan, making the lighted, radiant, etheric body, which is very strong, sufficiently strong to provide a very stable base on the outer level for the initiate. We have a transfiguration here with Uranus, Neptune, and Vulcan. And thus the work at this point is seen complete. Now, so at the third initiation one can reveal. Well, DK sometimes interprets this as revealing the monad, but it's also possible to consider it as revealing the content of the egoic consciousness on the higher mental plane. It is a preliminary step, and not easy of achievement, and not commonly achieved in man as he is now. The whole is vision. Now, we will always be dealing with the wholeness with these stanzas. This is one of the signatures of the third initiation, the appreciation of the wholeness, not as something other, but as something as which one identifies. So this, of course, is there are holes and holes, wholenesses and wholenesses, we might say. There is an aspect of the whole which one can only vision. You know, the greater whole one can only vision. The more local wholeness of the planetary logos, with that one can begin to identify. So visioning is not yet being there. Maybe at the fifth degree, that which is visioned, at the fifth degree, that which is here visioned will be the point of identification. In other words, isolated unity. One will be the unity which one has isolated in vision. One will know oneself as the unity which one has isolated in his vision. But, you know, identification is a progressive thing. It's not done overnight. If you think about it, high noon is preceded by morning, is preceded by the dawn. Sometimes we act as if enlightenment will come instantaneously, and we hear stories, you know, that I'm recalling a story now of the famous Buddhist teacher, almost given a kind of the status of a deity, Tsongkhapa, and that he was enlightened by a fly. This is how the story goes, anyway, the story that I was told, that when he saw the fly, suddenly came the moment of enlightenment. Of course, you would think enlightenment is progressive, so we'd have to ask what kind of enlightenment came to him at that point, because obviously he was already in a very high state, and some consider him a kind of embodiment of the Buddha. Well, with emanation being what it is, and the possibility of overshadowing and being what it is, and the possibility of the higher being using the vehicle of a lower being, many things are possible which we might normally think to be impossible. In other words, in the case of emanation and the merging of identities and the use of one body by an inner spirit, truth can seem stranger than fiction. The magic work is wrought. Well, what is the magic work? It's always a question of bringing the opposites together into fusion. So bringing the high into the low, particularly, such that the high represents the low. We don't want to bring the high into the low, just using the energies of the high for the sake of forms which are motivated from below. Rather, we seek to take the idea that is found, sponsored by the soul, and to bring that idea into full manifestation. So magic is a question of taking the subtle forms in heaven and objectifying them as denser form in the lower material worlds. So it's kind of a magic to bring the poles together, to bring the How about spelling here? The poles together is an act of magic. And this is exactly what's happening here when the personality and the soul are being fused, when the angel and the pilgrim are being fused. It is a magical work. A higher pattern is instituting itself in a lower. A higher pattern of energy, i.e., an angel of the presence, is instituting itself in a lower field of energy with heretofore lower patterns. And when heaven and its archetypal patterns can descend into the world of lower patterns and remake them and reconfigure them and refine them and render them resonantly responsive to an archetype, we have magic. So creating lower forms which are resonantly responsive to a descending archetype, this is magic. Well, maybe the archetype doesn't have to quite descend. Maybe you can say where it is, but at least it's in resonant rapport with the form that represents it. In the magical process, the lower form, or let's say the higher form, comes to be they come to be in resonant response to each other. This is the case of Gemini, and the lower will respond to the higher. And the higher will also receive and respond to the lower. It's a two-way street here. But when we can make those creations in the lower worlds, which are really resonantly responsive to the true forms in the inner worlds, and these forms are archetypes, then we have completed a magical work. And so, again, the two are one. This is a reassertion of what is the original assertion here. The two are one, and this is an even more complete description of the two becoming one. This is either hammering the point home, or it is a more complete fusion. Well, the final fusion will really be when the monad walks the earth in a Maya Virupa, or the monad can express itself as much as possible through an etheric structure. That will be a still higher blending of two into one. I think so much of our life is the overcoming of duality. We are here in this very dualistic lower 18 subplane fields. We are adjudicators between the pairs of opposites. The pairs of opposites on our planet are very accentuated. The polarities are very accentuated. Let's take a look at Earth School here just for one moment again. If we went through Esoteric Psychology 1 and we went backwards, that wouldn't be it. We'd have to go into Esoteric Astrology and go healing and go backwards. So Earth School calls us the School of Magnetic Response. Another name given to its pupils is Graduates of Painful Endeavor and Adjudicators Between the Pairs of Opposites. Its graduates are said to undergo examination upon the third subplane of the astral plane. We wonder whether that would be the cosmic astral plane, because we have real graduates here. Now, what is a graduate? Is a graduate, I suppose, an initiate of a very high degree? Is a master considered to be a graduate, or does one have to be a seventh degree initiate to be a graduate? Well, anyhow, it's interesting. The third subplane may be the third from the top, and it's the highest of the planes of Brahma. And perhaps this is an examination to see whether we have overcome the dualism related to the third aspect in such a way that we can enter the fusion and union, unity provided by the second aspect. Well, there's still some mysteries there, I think. So again, the two are one, and notice the impersonal tone. In other ones, I serve the plan, I serve with will and love, and so forth. But there is the objectivity of conclusion. When we finally reach the end of a synthetic process, we maybe stand back and do not involve the sense of I-ness so much. Let's take a look here at how it is stated by a number of these who have achieved. With all I have, I serve the plan. I therefore serve the plan. I serve the plan. See? I will with love to serve the plan. I serve the whole. And I serve the plan. Well, with will, and then we get to the seventh stanza, and there's no I in this at all. It's the plan is served. No word need then be said. Isn't that interesting? It's as if we have stood back, and where is the I in all this? We are into the passive voice, grammatically speaking. And so the emphasis upon the individual is negated. But as a result of all of this, fusion, union, wholeness seen, local wholeness identified with, magic completed, the two being one, because that is the factor of relationship which the seventh ray can provide. It can particularly bring heaven to earth and earth to heaven. As a result of all this, we stand back and we simply say, we who have now a more remote and objective position, standing back, emerged with the angel of the presence, that in all this the plan is served. Because the plan must come to earth, that is, must show itself and work its magic in the lower 18 subplanes. It may come from an atomic formulation of a monadic purpose, but it must descend into the lower 18 subplanes and there bring about a reconfiguration of relationship. So with objectivity and with distant vision, as a result of these consummations, some voice, some observer notes that the plan is served, and then notice there was no word, there was only a symbol, a painted sign with a painted symbol, and it was held aloft for inspiration. When all of this is completed, no word which brings about further activity is needed. All is obvious, all is transparently apparent, and no further words are needed to explain the process or to move the process forward. So we have a real consummation. And at all true consummations, as with all true works of art, any further addition in terms of color or sound or word simply reduce the quality of that which is already achieved. So we have the sense that we've really come to the end here, end of the fusion process. And nothing needs to be added to it, or taken, or can be taken from it. This is heaven on earth. This is soul as personality, personality as soul. This is the, you know, the, well, it's the seal of Solomon, really. The higher triangle into the lower into the higher, with the point at the center. I think in a way, King Solomon's seal describes this. King Solomon's seal with the point at the center describes this. Okay. There are some storms out here, and I have to be careful now. So at any point, the thunder and lightning can start breaking loose. It's a heavy morning with lowering clouds, and it isn't wonderful for the internet. Let me now read in summary what we've just said. It's kind of a running commentary, and then we will read the whole and then move on to the final few paragraphs which summarize this whole process. The angel of the presence lifts one hand, the right hand, into the blue of heaven. It is the true area of livingness where solar life is found. Solar principles, and not the dense physical vehicle. It is the blue. The dense physical vehicle of the solar logos is not the point of reception. It is his cosmic etheric vehicle, which is responsive to the blue, and probably some violet as well. He plunges deep, the other, the left hand, into the sea of forms. Water is matter, and there are many fluid forms which he is going to affect by the energy he can transmit from above. Thus he connects the world of form, the lower subplanes, in this case the lower 18 subplanes, with formless and formless life. And he is in an intermediary position. He is in a position which is considered form from the solar logoic point of view, and relatively formless from the planetary logoic point of view. Heaven to earth, he brings earth to heaven. This is a bit like the substitution of the cosmic ethers for the systemic ethers. He's bringing the world of the cosmic ethers into the dense physical vehicle of the planetary logos. And he's bringing those higher, lower vibratory levels up into responsiveness and translation into the cosmic ethers. One day there will be no dense physical vehicle of the planetary logos. It will all be it will all be etheric, and thus it will go as well for all the vehicles of the solar logos. None of these chakric representations will be outwardly planetary, outwardly dense. There will be an etheric representation for their physicality. Ether is the true physicality. Anyway, you can understand I use the symbol of King Solomon's seal. The lower triangle rising into the toward the higher. Well, the two triangles merging with each other until that which descends from above and that which ascends from below become the six-pointed star. This, the man who is the pilgrim, standing before the angel at the third initiation, knows. He sees this process of fusion going on before his eyes, and he feels it within himself. He grasps the meaning of the painted sign which the angel holds aloft. He understands the process of fusion in which he is engaged, and how a consummation is being brought about through his merging as the pilgrim with the angel of the presence. And all of the sign indicates all of these evidences of consummation, the marriage in the heavens, and the unity between all of these factors, outer, inner, objective, subjective, spirit, matter, physical, and essential. He is in the process of effusion. He knows it. He's experiencing it. And the angel is conducting the fusion with the cooperation of the pilgrim. The whole process that he is undergoing is described in his painted sign. And his grasping the meaning of this sign is a kind of the realization of that in which he is engaged. All right, and then it is said, the two are one, soul and personality. Not more at this stage remains to grasp. The man need grasp nothing further at this stage. The fusion is working. The word, which is the word of the soul, is manifest through him who has been working as a personality, as a disciple in form. So in the lunar vehicles, the solar word is manifest. The work is seen complete, the work which leads to the first solar initiation. This work which has finally made of him a junior member of hierarchy is complete. This work of solarization in which the lunar tendency is finally raised into a solar accomplishment, a solar expression. The whole is vision because the sun is the symbol of the whole. And at this point, the third eye is active, and the coming together of the energies of the triangle above the head, at the base of the skull, and at the forehead, this triangle evokes the third eye, which can see the whole. There is identification, growing identification, with the local wholeness, with the planetary logos, and in a vague sense, with the wholeness beyond. The whole is seen as one. You know, it's a Cancerian phrase. But let's just say the universal whole is intuited as one. But there is here a vision of the articulation of the wholeness in which he is involved. It's not just the vague wholeness, it's all the content of the whole as well, and how all things are related within the whole. This is the magic work of bringing the opposites together. So soul and personality, when they fuse, represent a consummation of an important spiritual type of magical work. And again, it is reasserted, again, the two are one. It's not that they've ever ceased being one. We can even say that triad and personality are becoming one here through the good offices of the Angel of the Presence. We do need the higher triangle and the lower to merge. That is important. It's not just the soul realm and the personality. It is the triadal realm increasingly and the lower triad of the personality. And through the offices of the Angel of the Presence and the realization of the man or the pilgrim who is approaching the higher mental plane, these two can merge as well. The plan, conceived atmically and expressed in the lower 18 subplanes, is served by this whole process with detachment, with objectivity. It's not the I here that is telling what it will do. There is a kind of a remote vision of the whole process and an understanding of it from a distance. The realization comes that the plan is served by this merging, because the plan really does involve, well, it involves so many things, you know, light, love, and power, of course, but it involves bringing the etheric, cosmic etheric life of the solar logos and planetary logos into the 21 lower subplanes and into the 18 lower subplanes. So there is this merging of the principled with the cosmically principled, with the cosmically unprincipled, of the divine with the earthly and the mundane. This consummation is wrought. It's obvious, it's clear. No word needs to be said to describe it, and no further word to promote yet another step, because there are no more steps, at least in this phase. One sees exactly what has happened. One contemplates it in the silence. One does not need to change or alter anything. The angel of the presence lifts one hand into the blue of heaven. He plunges deep the other into the sea of forms. Thus he connects the world of form and formless life. Heaven to earth he brings, earth into heaven. This the man who stands before the angel knows. He grasps the meaning of the painted sign, which the angel holds aloft. And this symbolic phrase is described by the Tibetan. And this phrase expressed by a painted symbol symbolizes complete unity between the outer and the inner, the objective and the subjective, the spirit and matter, between spirit and matter, and between the physical and the essential. Then the stanza goes on, the two are one, naught more remains to grasp. The word is manifest. I just thought of the word grasp. It's a grasp with the mind, but it's also desire ceases here because the consummation has occurred. So we need not grasp anything further to contribute to the consummation. The word is manifest. The work is seen complete. The whole is visioned. The magic work is wrought. Again the two are one. The plan is served. No word need then be said. Okay, friends, we have completed, such as the completion is, this discussion of the Angel of the Presence stanzas, which deal with initiation. First, we dealt with the Blessed Ones, which dealt with the entire monadic pilgrimage, in a few sentences, and then with this phase of union that occurs at the third degree and even leading to the fourth degree, a new relationship between the angel and the man, which carries on towards the fourth degree, is established. Says the Tibetan, these phrases are an attempt to express some of the realizations of the true initiate. Only some, notice, not all. And I think, you know, DK was careful in telling us he was only going to give us some here. At the third initiation, before the angel, and sees that angel also pass away, so that naught is left but conscious knowledge and realization. So these phrases are an attempt to express some of the realizations of the true initiate as he stands at the third initiation before the angel, and sees that angel also pass away, so that naught is left but conscious knowledge and realization. I guess we can say that at the third degree, the angel does not completely withdraw. Maybe there is a passing into lesser prominence. And however this is spelled, prominence, I suppose. Yeah. Into lesser prominence and a taking over of the instruction of the pilgrim by the monad expressing through the jewel in the lotus. So this passing away also pass away. I mean, it could mean the withdrawal at the fourth degree, but it can also mean a lessening of emphasis and an increasing monadic reliance. So maybe we mean an increasing monadic reliance, because the monad becomes a conscious factor at this point. Another ray is entering, and I suppose that, you know, when a parent is teaching his child how to ride a bicycle, there comes a time when the training wheels have to be removed. Or you know how the parent runs along with the bicycle and lets go slowly, and the child is riding by himself and doesn't even realize it. So there is a relationship here of handing over responsibility to the rising pilgrim who is more and more realizing himself as the monad. So this is indeed a material concerning the third initiation, no question about it, even though there has been some contact in the initiation chamber with the angel of the presence at the first two initiations. This is more consummatory. Of course, I would imagine there's even a greater consummation that occurs at the fourth, some sort of fiery festival of departure, and maybe, well, there can be, my God, why hast thou forsaken me, but also a great gratitude expressed, I would expect. Although this statement may signify but little to us at present, it will nevertheless serve to demonstrate the futility of dealing with the secrets of the mysteries and with initiation through the medium of words. Conscious knowledge and realization. Well, the man has become the knower of the self, the knower of the self, both the egoic self and the increasingly of the monadic self. So we've been dealing through the medium of words, but they are also word symbols. So they require interpretation by the intuition, not, strictly speaking, the use of scientific descriptive approach. When this is better realized, the true work of the Masonic dramas will begin to measure up to the need, because the Masonic dramas are presented in allegory and symbolism. Presented in allegory and symbolism. And we do not have the descriptive use of mind as we might with the third and fifth ray. This section expresses some of the basic emerging truths which will carry meaning to the senior disciples and initiates of the world who are battling at this time in the service of the plan. So I guess a certain, even though it's Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, and the Tibetan said this is pretty much for initiates of the first degree, we have material here which is suggesting occurrences at the third degree, when a man is the pilgrim approaching causal entry, causal focus, the ability to focus at will within the causal body and thus merge with the angel of the presence. These initiates, these senior disciples, are present in the world at this time, and their work is bearing fruit, but they need at times the incentive, and only at times, of the future achievable glory to carry them on. And when dealing with transfiguration, the idea of glory is always present. The glorification, the transfiguration, is a glorification. It is an entry into a great body of light, and it is a condition of being and consciousness and also energy, which allows the great energy of the higher mental plane and beyond, fed from the beyond, to flood through the personality and bring increased measure of light to it. The St. Paul experience brought such an access of overpowering light that inwardly Paul was blinded for, interestingly enough, 3 days, the number of the initiation that he was beginning to pass through. Apparently it took some time to pass through that initiation, just as it does later. The later initiations are extended over time. This treatise is therefore somewhat abstruse and quite symbolical. It may appear difficult to comprehend, and it may mean little to some and nothing at all to others. If the disciples of the world are truly struggling, he really advises us to do that, doesn't he? And if they are applying practically the teaching given as far as in them lies, according to their fullest capability, they will find as time elapses and their reason and intuition awaken, notice reason as well awakens, that such symbolic and abstruse statements become clearer and clearer, serving to convey the intended teaching. So even if we don't understand so much about it right now and are treating it rather theoretically, rather academically, we can be assured that it will become a living process within us as we struggle to serve and struggle to apply the teaching. DK does emphasize battle and struggle. He does seek for us actually to engage with the opposing forces, not in any passive way. When this happens, the angel of the presence approaches even closer and lights the disciple on his way. How beautiful. The sense of separativeness or separateness diminishes until at last light permeates the darkness and the angel dominates the life. And as we've been saying, ending the ancient authority of the personality. That is what is achieved at the third degree. And so let us work, all of us, with whatever understanding we have to bring about the merging of the pilgrim, who is ourselves, with the overshadowing, watching, observing angel of the presence, which is, in a way, as much of the solar angel as we can possibly be and absorb. The fullness to be as the fullness of the solar angel will take yet another Mahamanvantara, I suppose. But we can enter, I would think, into an achievable measure of solar angelic potency by merging with the angel of the presence, that part of the solar angel which is embodied in our higher structure, the egoic lotus, which is being used as a kind of heart center by the monad. So let us find the way, studying these different stanzas and the one which we think or know applies to our soul ray, let us find the way to make these stanzas applicable in our lives, so that instead of having some quaint descriptions of strange angelic figures, we actually have a living process which applies directly to our discipleship work as it leads towards initiation. Okay, friends, that's going to be it for the moment. I'm running a little over, as usual. But I will continue to work, I think, in esoteric psychology. He says it's an abstruse book. It's this treatise is therefore abstruse and quite symbolical. He didn't just mean only what he's describing in this particular section. He says this treatise is the entire treatise of the seven rays, and we have to realize that when dealing with the 2-4-6 line, symbolism is very important, and here he's also bringing in the seventh ray line. So there's so much a practical usefulness to the Advancing Disciple in the Esoteric Psychology book, but it's deeper than we think. It is, I once said to a friend, I said, well, the earlier books, the easier books, like Esoteric Psychology, I certainly regret saying that now that I know more about what they're really trying to convey. So let's see if we can study such things as the integration formulas and the fusion formulas together, and also go to Esoteric Psychology Volume 1 and maybe study the names of the Ray Lords and the particular sentences related to the Ray Lords and the stanzas there. It'll take a while, but maybe this question of the seven Ray energies, their presence, their utility, will become ever more real to us as a result. Okay, then, thank you for listening thus far, and we'll continue with our work in esoteric astrology, then psychology. Then I'll get back to a treatise on cosmic fire, the stanzas of Xian, though written out in interpretive form, I think need to be discussed. And also there is that the whole second section of the rays and the initiations. The first section has rather complete commentaries on it. It still could do with some discussion. But the second section has not been discussed at all, at least here. And no commentaries have been written, so I'll be working on those, as well as this sort of video book on the egoic lotus, and hopefully on physiognomy as well. Well, we'll be talking to you, and see you soon. Bye-bye.